Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Ben Jackson and I'm your host for this episode. Fortunately no Joris, he's doing grown-up adult things this evening, so it's just Scott and I doing the non-grown-up adult stuff, I guess we could say. Scott, how are you doing this evening?
I'm really good, Ben. How are you? Hello everybody, I hope you're all well too. Well, if we haven't reached the business end of the season, remember Alex Ferguson used to call this squeaky bum time, Ben?
Ah, yes, squeaky bum time. One of those age-old expressions that you can use at any point in your life. A fantastic one to use. No, we have definitely reached the business end, although a couple of teams may be already on their holidays, which we'll definitely get to. Quick run through of the results from the weekend, and we'll dive straight in. Ghent hammered Standard Liège on Friday night, 5-1. Leuven and Mechelen played out a bit of a bonkers game. That one finished 3-2 to Mechelen. Anderlecht beat Antwerp 1-0. St. Truiden beat Vesterlo 2-0. Cercle Brugge and Club Brugge drew 1-1. Genk beat Union Saint-Gilloise 1-0. So obviously let's start in Ghent with that 5-1 win over Standard Liège. I can't remember, Scott, if a couple of the Standard players were saying like, well, who knows, maybe we could sneak into Europe and stuff. And whoever did say, I don't want to like throw him under the bus, I can't remember who said it, but I'm pretty sure one of them said it. And then to go and absolutely drop the ball like this, like get absolutely pummeled at home. And I don't know, you just look at that result and you just kind of think, they're the team I was kind of suggesting that are definitely on their holidays already, it feels like. And the defending was just so bad for like the first goal, it was bad. All the other subsequent goals, it was just, they just parted like the Red Sea. Lifis, our good friend Lifis, he finished about a 4.6 rating on FootMob, which like that, you've got to be bad to get a 4.6, haven't you, without getting a red card or scoring an own goal. Yeah, awful from him. Gendelman scores again. It feels like this was like, for Ghent, the perfect team to play, wasn't it, to start these playoffs?
Yeah, I think coming into this game, Ivan Lekko was saying that, you know, going to, you know, what has been a renamed stadium now. What is it called? The Planet Something or Other Arena. This was confirmed today. Sam Barrow's company, Ghent's new owner, his company are now sponsoring what was the Glamco and latterly the KA Ghent Arena. So for another name change there. Yeah, going to that stadium, whatever it's called now, is never an easy game. It was certainly an easy game for Ghent, I have to say that. I mean, it's funny because Ivan Lekko was saying after the game, he thought Standard were quite good in the first half. He felt that was as good a performance he's seen since he's come in the first half, which I thought was slightly strange in itself. And then he says, I don't know what happened in the second half. I must tell everybody that when we were watching this, I was sharing with Ben and Joris. I was watching Ivan Lekko quite a lot. The camera was on him a lot. And he was looking so despondent. It was unbelievable, and it got worse and worse, obviously, as that second half went on, and he did finish up looking like he was going to cry. I said this to Ben and Joris because it's actually true. I thought he was going to, and you wouldn't blame him, to be honest. I mean, Doumbia, Lifis and Nubi were awful in this game, really. Lifis has actually been, and we've said as much in, over the last few weeks, he's been one of Standard's better players. So to go from being one of their best players to one of their worst is really quite something in such a short space of time. A bit of positive news in this game, and it's not Standard related, unfortunately, it's Ghent related. We did see a senior debut for 16-year-old centre-back Jordi Mocchio, who lots of people have been talking about for a little while now and waiting for this moment. So he got his five or six minutes of senior debut fame, which was very nice to see. So keep an eye on him because he is definitely one to watch. They have really high hopes for him. Again, I think it's the third youngest Pro League debut, I think, in history, something like that. Pretty impressive anyway. Back to Standard. Lekko actually called his players lazy after this game, and I think he was talking about his defenders particularly. He didn't name anybody, but it was obvious reading between the lines that's who he was talking about. So much work to do there. I've said this before, Ben, but like I'm desperate to say something nice about Standard, but they just keep confounding it. It's like they don't want to do it. Standard fans again raging this week. Obviously what was a really poor performance, and a lot of them now have doubts as to whether even Ivan Lekko is going to stay around. Fergal Harkin saying a few days ago he certainly is going to be here. The fans are not 100% convinced by that at the moment. And who knows, because massive job to do there. And an issue on Ghent, obviously, big doubt as to whether Big Hein will be there. It's looking like he won't be next season. The man who was in the dugout for this game because of Hein's ban has certainly made a claim for that job, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. No, I know what you mean about trying to say something nice about Standard, isn't it? I mean, maybe just that the season's almost over. That's maybe one of the nice things. Although it now just feels like such a waste of time them playing out the rest of the season, doesn't it? This is where kind of you get that excitement of the playoffs in terms of who's going to qualify for what bit. But then you get into it and you quickly realise that suddenly we could be, well, now Standard basically have nothing to play for. There's literally nothing for them to be competing for. And the way they're playing and half of them on loan anyway, it just feels like such a waste of everyone's time, doesn't it, really? But I don't know. And I don't know what you think about this, Scott, but I've seen recently lots of kind of chatter, I guess, around Wilfried Kanga and people, other clubs in Belgium being interested in him. I just don't really get it. I don't know if it's just me, but I haven't seen anything from him that makes me think he is definitely the player to kind of invest some money in. Like, he's shown some nice moments, but a lot of average performances from him. Like, this game, nothing really special. Like, I think, what's his stats? Kind of 9 goals this season for Standard in 20-something games. So it's not terrible, but it's not someone I'm looking at thinking he is definitely the player to go out and get for these other sides. I'm sure there's probably better other strikers out there, like Ghent being one of those sides that were linked with him, and I just don't really see that. I don't know what your thoughts are on him and kind of his return to Belgium in the future. Although he did actually say he wouldn't play for any other Belgian team but Standard, but I mean, everyone says things they don't actually mean.
It is quite an interesting one because there's been a lot of chatter for him for kind of a while now. And a bit like you, I don't entirely get it. I think he's a player whose all-round game works quite well at this level. And I think there's probably a line of thought that says that if you can give him the right sort of service, he'll score more than 9 for you. I mean, Antwerp were rumoured to be quite interested in him. Club, I think, are reasonably keen as well. And it makes slightly more sense maybe for those two. I think he fits in there in a way. Obviously, a certain Thiago is going to be going to Brentford fairly shortly. His goals have dried up since that ridiculous fee was finalised for him. And maybe they're thinking, OK, here's a player who knows the league, who, when you give him the right service, can kind of do a job. So I think he kind of gets it. But I think there's interest outside Belgium in him as well. Standard have been quite public in saying that they want to keep him. And he's, I think, even last week he was saying he's open to that conversation. So I don't think he's really decided yet. But he did say things would have to change here if I was going to stay here. And I think that's the nub of it, really. Ronnie Dyla left because there wasn't going to be enough change. Kanga's now saying, I don't want to stay in this environment unless something fundamental changes. And that fundamental covers lots of things. And I don't think that's going to change. There's been some wild rumours this week as well about the sorts of money that 777 are prepared to spend. Emphasis on rumours, because to me, I'm looking at it going, this 30 million that's been floated around in some areas is just pure fiction. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and I feel like we've heard those numbers before, haven't we? And then got to the summer and they barely signed any. Well, they just signed those of free agents, a couple of whom have left, a couple of whom who will leave, and a couple of loanees. So, yeah, take that with a pinch of salt, if you will. And that, I think that's the thing with the future of Lecco. It's just, is he going to soon realise what he's actually signed himself up for? Like, there could be these grand promises that him and Harkin actually never get to actually see. Let's go to King Power and Delief for Leuven against Mechelen. Obviously, a repeat of the fixture that finished the season with Leuven striking late. This time, Mechelen actually got their revenge striking late. And I think this game was actually mental. It looked like Mechelen had it really under control when Fulan scored the second, which is such a good solo goal from him. Like, we've been kind of praising him a lot recently, and it's nice to see him do that. Then Slimani gets himself off, Mazee scores, Opoku's flick was a really nice finish as well. And it's just so funny, you have these like jubilation in the 96th minute, then Konate bundles it in the 97th to give Mechelen the lead, and there's still time for Cook to pull off a world-class save at the other end to keep it at 3-2. And I don't know, yeah, again, Leuven have now got absolutely nothing to play for, and fair play to them, they did actually put some effort into this game when they didn't have to, because realistically they had no real chance of getting into European contention or to win the playoff to then get into European contention. But I think, like, without being biased at all or anything like that, Scott, this was a really good result for playoff two. Like, we need Mechelen to stay as close to Ghent for as long as possible to keep this playoff relevant, I guess, because it could very quickly be what it's been in the past few seasons, where the team that's at the top of it just strolls through it and wins it, and it's just a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah, good game this. I mean, if you wanted entertainment, this was possibly the most entertaining game of the weekend, you know, and a fair bit of wildness, as Ben was saying, they're thrown into this. From a Mechelen perspective, you know, Marabti and Fluk, really good this weekend. Marabti's right back on the mood juice again. He's been pretty good for a little while again, as have most of this squad, actually, since they came back. We've been talking about this a lot. Fulon, you were just talking about there, Ben, I think is getting better and better all the time. It took him a little while to settle, and then once he did, he's found some form, which he's really maintained. Really good signing for them, actually. There's something, you know, about this Mechelen side, there's a resilience and a pragmatism about them under Beznik Kazi that wasn't really there before. They were really entertaining and pretty gung-ho in all the right ways under Wouter Franken. And then they struggled, obviously, to readjust under Stephen Defoe, and they seem to have just kind of hit it off with Beznik Kazi. A lot of people had their doubts, including us to a certain extent, that might necessarily be the right match, but it's worked. They're talking about extending the deal. He wants to stay. A little caveat in here possibly is he is looking for some assurances around staying. Nobody knows really what they are yet. I suspect they're about certain players perhaps still being there. And if they're not, what that might mean. So that's one to keep an eye on. It's not done yet, despite Beznik Kazi's willingness to stay. And from Leuven, yeah, you're right. I mean, that's kind of it in a way now. But it's amazing what happens when the pressure's off in a way. You know, they go and score a couple of goals, and although they weren't the best side in this game, they were right in it for the majority of it. And they haven't been in a lot of games this season. So once the big pressure's lifted from you, you can start to play a bit of football. And that's what led to this being quite an entertaining game.
Absolutely. And who'd have had Cobalt, Fulon and Konate as the goal scorers for Mechelen? You'd have, with all the other players that were on the pitch, like you said, and Rabti and Fluke were great. And then, yeah, Fulon's just, he's just been fantastic all season, really, like, well, most of the season. So a good win for Mechelen. And I think it's kind of the similar situation, is it, to what, not as dramatic, I guess, in the Lecco standard case, but it's kind of, Hazi needs to know, like, what is he going to have to work with next season? Is it going to be enough that he can continue this on, or does he jump while his stock is as high as it is at the moment? I think that's kind of his thing. And I guess it's around the goalkeeping position that's important. You wouldn't expect someone like a Rob Skoofs to go. You're probably not expecting a Rabti to go. I think these guys are in the stage of their career where they're probably going to be hanging around. But then I guess there's a couple of other positions that will need strengthening. Striker, obviously, is like the big one. That's kind of the big thing. And it's kind of, who are they looking at to fill that void? Because Laubach and Bassett coming in didn't really do it. Slimani obviously has been a big improvement in that area. Without scoring the goals, he still improved them. But him isn't obviously a long-term solution. They don't know if they can keep him in the summer. So all those sort of things to come. Let's go to playoff one. Anderlecht obviously put a lot of pressure on Union with this win over Antwerp. Antwerp probably weren't helped going down to 10 men. You can say Rindal getting sent off for that altercation with Hazard. Hazard obviously making the most of it to ensure that it was a red card. Saw a bit of Richie Delat in the second half, which was nice. Obviously, big shout out to Richie. He's going to be leaving Antwerp at the end of the season. Unsure if he's going to retire or if he's going to keep playing. I guess that depends on what the options are. But I don't know, Scott, I'll always remember that goal he scored against Oostend when we went a few seasons ago, the volley against Oostend. One of the most ridiculous goals I've ever seen in the stadium. And I think Richie Delat scoring it made it the more ridiculous one. But unfortunately for him, he's on the losing end. Kylian Sardella with the only goal. They did have their chances, though, Antwerp. They were just really, really wasteful in front of goal. Big blow now as well for Antwerp is that Boutet is going to be out for the season. He fractured an arm, which sounds pretty horrendous. So I presume Sonny Lammens will come in, which is nice for him. He gets to kind of play the end of the season, and who knows, he might get the Cup Winners' Medal as well if they win that Cup Final. Quite a nice kind of way to jump straight in. And lots of people saying that could be his last game, Jean Boutte, for the club. He may be off. But for Anderlecht, they just have to keep grinding out these results. They're putting pressure on Union, and it is starting to work.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is starting to work. I mean, questions already about whether Union are, you know, some people were saying, bottling it already. For me, it's too early to know yet. I mean, obviously this weekend is significant in that's it. You know, the advantage, such as it was, has been wiped out. And it really is about, you know, I was talking about squeaky bum time earlier. It's about holding your nerve now. Obviously, they're still to play each other twice, so there's quite a bit of football still to be played yet. Anderlecht made slight hard work of this. In truth, they were the better side and probably did deserve to win it. The red card did help, Thorgan Hazard going down like he'd been shot in the face. We saw some funny red cards this weekend, actually, while we're bringing this one up. Obviously, Vindal's one there, which I think, I mean, the issue with this is if Hazard doesn't react that way, it's probably not a red. But we also saw as well, Slimani's red was weird. Christian Burgess's red this weekend was pretty weird. We'll get to that one. And then there was another one that wasn't a red in the Bruges derby. I think it was Brandon Mekela. His head was thrust into Kevin Denke's face at one point, and Denke didn't react. He just stood up like the unit that Big Kev is. You know, there was no going down like I'd been shot in the face here. And I think it was purely Kev's reaction that meant that didn't become anything more than it was, because it's essentially the same thing. So we saw some more inconsistent refereeing this weekend, which was interesting as well, because I know our Joris isn't with us this week, but he did say, please remind everybody that the coaches and the captains did meet with the refereeing department and the heads of the VAR team to discuss how the playoffs were going to work in terms of the refereeing. And the message that was handed down from the FA apparently was, we're going to be really hard, we're going to be really strict. And Christian Burgess discovered maybe what that meant this weekend as well, with the first red card of his career. But yeah, Anderlecht doing everything they need to do at the moment. I say hard work. It was solid enough without being as impressive as they have been recently. Antwerp, pretty average, to be honest. There's something, Antwerp have been a bit underwhelming this season on the whole. You know, they've been solid enough to compete with most people most of the time, but not really been able to get any sort of consistency going that made you think they were, you know, going to be able to defend their title, really. Obviously, they've lost Vermeeren. They've had some more injuries this season, which haven't helped, and there's been a little bit more tweaking going on as well. So a bit of change there. Enough to keep them competitive, but, you know, not enough to keep them sort of challenging. Mark Van Bommel said as well after this game that he thought Hazard, he got asked about Hazard's going down, and he said, look, he's just being intelligent about it, you know, so I don't really mind. And to say that publicly was interesting. I know coaches say these things privately, but to say it to the press corps that he kind of admired him for doing it and essentially would have done the same thing, I thought was interesting, because that's not a message I think that's great in a public forum. Brian Reimer, obviously delighted. But we've been here before as well. A couple of weeks ago, Union dropped points, Anderlecht took advantage, and then the following week, Anderlecht lost surprisingly at home to Kortrijk. So it's funny the way these things work. But we're starting on a totally level playing field now.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was interesting. Yeah, Van Bommel made a couple of substitutions at half time, like Aduke and Ondrejka off, bringing on Balikwisha and Koulibaly. Koulibaly was a defender, so he kind of tried to look like maybe he was trying to hold out for the point, which, yeah, in the end didn't really work because they conceded a couple of minutes later. But I'll get to my kind of maybe a hot take later on, who knows. But Antwerp, obviously, they face Genk next, which is kind of one of those battles for that kind of finishing within the top four. Well, it's finishing fourth or third, but obviously they've got the cup final, so it's kind of, they've got a two kind of bites at the cherry, I guess you could say. Whereas yeah. Anderlecht travel, I believe, to Club Brugge. So that, like, Club will want to spoil both of the team's parties, I guess we could say, wouldn't they? Like, that'll be their thing. They want to kind of do that. And They're technically not even out of it either. We'll get to them in a bit, but that should be a feisty one, because you know that the Club Brugge fans especially will be like, we do not want them winning that title at all. So it should be quite a good atmosphere, because you know the Anderlecht will travel well as well. So yeah, that should be quite a fun one to watch next weekend. Sint-Truiden against Westerlo, next one we'll go to. I kind of had this kind of penciled as potentially one we might actually not have to talk about, depending on how the result went. But fair play to the Canaries, because they've kept themselves slightly in the hunt to win playoff, to win the second playoff. It really just, they have to beat Ghent twice, really. So that's kind of what it's going to come down to. So once they've lost one to Ghent, that's pretty much it. We can kind of bookend that and say, congratulations, season's over. But Yanni Stoikers with a double to keep them in this game. Not much really to say. It's kind of just Vestalo, they're here now. Like, they're just there, kind of existing, aren't they, really? I don't even know what to say. I didn't even, literally had nothing to say about them, to be honest. I was just like, oh, yeah, fine. Like, they again, like, them against Standard Liège now is probably one of the most pointless matches we're going to have this season in this playoffs, isn't it? Because, I mean, unless something very controversial happens, we will probably not touch on that game whatsoever, because it's a waste of our time and it's a waste of the listeners' time having to, like, even think that a game took place. It's like, you may as well just not bother. Do you know what I mean? But fair play to Sint-Truiden. Clean sheet. Stoikers with two goals. He's probably deserved more goals this season and more kind of assists as well. Bertaccini getting a start as well, which is nice to see. This is literally the time that needs to be giving him Pro League experience, so that next season he can hit the ground running as their main striker.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think there's too much to say about this game. Stoikers was really good, even aside from his two goals. I thought, you know, take them away from him and he still has a really good game. And it was just nice, you know, as you were saying, to see Bertaccini get a decent amount of game time from the start, because he's been pretty invisible since he came in under Torsten Fink. We said this when he came in a while ago, that he doesn't necessarily fit the system at the moment. So Fink was quite open and said, look, he needs a bit of time to adjust to what we're doing here and what I'm trying to do. He was honest about that. And he hasn't really featured at all apart from this weekend. So maybe this is the start of more game time for him, because I think he is a player who probably does have a future there, which is obviously important. Also important that they try everything they've got to hold on to Torsten Fink, because generally he's been a great success there. And, you know, we'll say it again, they've been really one of the revelations of the season. You know, if you want a side who are good to watch from a neutral perspective, then they probably take the prize for that ahead of anyone else almost. Westerlo, on them, a bit of a weird one really, because obviously, you know, the fallout from De Mille is really still going on. He was answering along with Wouter Vranken to those charges today at the FA. So we might find out tomorrow what the punishment, if any, is going to be. Westerlo kind of in limbo a little bit. They would probably have more to play for if Rick DeMille was still there. At the moment, it all just feels about, right, okay, we were so angry, we've sacked him, we don't quite know what we're going to do now, so let's look around and just kind of plan for next season now. So yeah, a kind of free hit in every sense for Eric Rieners, who's in there just now on a temporary basis. So we'll see if he can make anything of it, because if he can, you know what I mean, he's got a nice little run of games there to maybe impress somebody. But there won't be any shortages of candidates, I think, people willing to take that job, because they're in a reasonable place, you know, and recovered from what was a really poor kind of first half of the season.
Yeah, and they're definitely just like chucking loads of teenagers in, aren't they? Like Josemir Alcacer, 19-year-old. Karol Boris, 17-year-old Polish midfielder coming on as well. So may as well chuck them all in. But I mean, we know kind of how they play when they've got nothing to play for. So at least they put some effort into this one. They didn't just stand around and let Sint-Truiden walk all around them. But for next week, they've got nothing to play for. So maybe they're going to show what they really mean when they don't have anything to play for, like they did under Victor Mill. But yeah, free hit, but yeah, it's just, there's going to be a question about the playoffs anyway, but I feel like this is going to be a recurring theme of teams that are just completely out of it. at that point, and Veszlo are one of them. Veszlo, Leuven and Standard, basically their season's done now. Like, they've got nothing really to play for, since Huda, Mechelen and Ghent obviously do. And they can play spoiler and stuff like that, but I don't feel like it means as much as being the spoiler in the kind of the top playoff, does it, where you can spoil like a team's title chances, and that kind of means something a little bit more. And there's a little bit more kind of antagonism and rivalry in the top playoffs than there is in these ones. Like, there's not as much kind of hatred or any kind of rivalry between these teams that will get it a bit exciting. Maybe Veszlo against Ghent after what happened at the back end of at the end of the season, but Demir's not there anymore, and it's just a bit in there. So we'll move on to the Bruges derby, which finished exactly the same as the other Bruges derby, I believe, didn't it? 1-1. That one finished, 1-1 was last time out as well, if I remember correctly, on the 18th of Feb. Denki opened the scoring, Olsen with the other goal, but a lot happened in between that, mainly from Varlason. What a performance from the Brazilian goalkeeper. I've been quite a big fan of his for quite a while, actually. I'm going to kind of toot my own horn, but I remember when I saw him before they signed Thomas Dillion, that a couple of games, I was like, he looks like a decent shot stopper. The rest of his game is a bit dodgy, but then he kind of fell out of favour. But then he's been pretty solid this season. Like, he still has a couple of mistakes in him, but he's got assists. And in this game, he was just kind of forming a little bit of a brick wall, and you could see the Club Bruges players are getting quite frustrated. I think one of my favourite moments was at the end, where it was like way past kind of stoppage time at this point, and the ball goes out for a Club Bruges free and halfway through the circle of half, and obviously the referee blows for full time. And Odoi and Hayen are like screaming, like, how can you stop the game at this point? I was like, what are you talking about? I get it when it's a corner, I completely understand. But like, a throw-in like in the middle of like the opposition half is no reason to keep the game going. Like, come on, man. The quickest I've seen Odoi move, maybe, for a while. Interesting that he started the game. Again, you'd think Hayen's coming in, play the youth, but he starts Odoi. And I don't understand. I'd be playing Sabat every single game for here on out. I think he looks like a real prospect. He makes mistakes, obviously. A couple of times Minda had him on toast, but Minda goes past him and he works his ass off to try and get back in there. So I think give the kid way more minutes. He like looks to me like he actually does deserve it. And he seems to always be having to come on because whoever's playing right back is just completely messed up and just looks pretty pointless and terrible. So it's like, why not just start the kid to begin with? I don't think this was an unfair result, to be fair. I thought they were good in patches. I thought Utkus was good in patches as well. But there were so many times where Club were able to get in behind them, and they looked very, very open, more open than they have in a long time. And it's just really poor touches from Nuclear. Rodriguez still hasn't scored. That's 7 games now. I've got a couple of stats on him I'll bring to you, Scott, once you've done your kind of analysis of the game. But I thought, Varlason, excellent. On another day, Club should probably have won this by a lot more, but he was great, and then the finishing really did let them down.
Yeah, well, Varlason nearly got another one of those great assists from the launched ball. It's becoming a bit of a trademark of his now, and I'm sure there's a lot of video analysts now who sit in meetings pre-game before they play Circle and go, watch this guy, he's going to try this trick at least once in almost every game, because it works for him most of the time, and it nearly worked again this weekend. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe that, you know, he's pulling the same trick out again. But yeah, he has been really good. And actually, an aspect of his game that I really like is reading of the game is really good. Much better than most goalkeepers, I think. He came flying out of his box on a couple of occasions and did the full-on sweeper keeper thing. He's a few steps ahead of some people. So he's a much more intelligent goalkeeper than I think people give him credit for as well. Which is kind of funny because, you know, you mentioned Thomas Diddy on there, and he was pretty impressive for Cercle as well. So to come in and arguably do even better is really quite something. Cercle started this game really well. I thought the first 25 minutes, I couldn't believe they weren't a couple of goals up. You know, they really should have taken a couple of chances and been well on top by that point. Much the better side in the first half, Cercle. Club really poor, really, really poor in the first half. Some strong words at halftime, I suspect, because they were much better in the second half. And like you, Ben, I think Miron Muzlic said afterwards that he felt Cercle got away with one, actually. He thought if, you know, club had really taken the chances they'd created, then, you know, they would have won it quite easily in the end. But it's been the story of club season, you know, big periods in games where they've dominated, created chances and just failed to take them. Nobody seems to want to put the ball in the net for them. So that problem that ultimately was the same issue that really killed Ronnie Dyla is actually still there. And I think, having seen this game, that sacking him, I do think that was a mistake now. It doesn't matter, it's done, it's history. But looking at their performance this weekend, it was all the same issues. There was no immediate response or anything different that I thought, okay, the players feel good about this change. It was you know, a copy and paste job in a way. Yeah, so Nicky Hyann coming in, talking pre-match about the players being really motivated, didn't really see it because, as I was saying, copy and paste, all the same issues again until he, obviously there's some fireworks at halftime, they come out and it's entirely different. Be very interesting to see how he does, actually, because, you know, this 10-game run is a reasonable number of games to show what you can do. He's obviously, you know, coached at the top flight in Belgium before when he was at Beveren. Unfortunately, they went down, which reflects on him. But, you know, he's coached at a top flight club before, has come back, is getting an opportunity here that he probably never thought he would get at this particular club, although he's done very well at Club Next. He's very much part of the coaching staff there at various levels. So it will be interesting to see, because they've been talking to candidates for quite a while yet. There's still no technical director. There's still a number of issues there. I suppose club will come away from this weekend and just be happy that they're above Cercle.
Yes, they are 2 points above Cercle. Cercle, after the weekend's results, bottom of that group. Yeah, you mentioned this, for like not taking their chances. Even like Van Aken, man, like there was one that the ball came into the box and he was just free, and I was like, "That's a goal! It's Van Aken!" Like, and he just put it over the bar, and I was like, "Okay, no, there's something wrong here." Like, I know I've kind of questioned him in the past, but I was like, from that position, that is like the XG on that you have to take into the factor. It's Van Aken would be like a one. Yeah, on. If there are any Brentford fans listening, we spoke about Igor Thiago Rodriguez, Thiago Igor, whatever name you want to give him, your record signing over there. No goals in 7 games. And I remember when club signed him, I was like, I swear he had like a goal drought for Ludogorets, and I went and actually looked at the numbers. So this seems to be like a pattern potentially in his career, which I don't know if you can get away with in the Premier League. I just feel like the media spotlight's too strong on a player at that value. So first 21 games in the league for Ludogorets last year, I think in Europe as well, 4 goals in 21 games. He then ends the season with 15 and 32. So he can just go on these crazy runs where he does find the back of the net, but he misses lots of chances. And I feel like that's killing club a little bit. And I feel like Club Brugge fans have known that the whole season. Like, they've seen this the whole season. They've seen it. So, yeah, I think he desperately needs to rediscover some form before he makes that move. I think it would kill him if he doesn't. And unfortunately, I think I said to you guys, like, if he doesn't rediscover his form, I think it's, what, a year in the Premier League or half a year in the Premier League, then a loan to Turkey, and then he'll be playing for one of the big boys in Turkey, like, unless he can really, like, nail it down. Because we've seen it before. Like, we've seen it with so many players, strikers from this league that go over. So I hope he can buck the trend, because it's good for the coffers of the other Belgian sides. But at the moment, I'm not quite seeing. And I think they, even like Jukla coming on, he looked like a bit rough. Like, his touches were quite poor and stuff like that. So yeah, it's going to be another searching summer to find a guy that can put the ball in the back of the net, unfortunately, for Club Brugge. But it is what it is. They're still in with a chance of European football. They still got a chance of that. Nicky Hayen, yeah, I don't think he'll get the full-time job, but it's a nice chance for him to show other people like what he can do and stuff like that. Let's go then to Genk, who faced Union Saint-Gilloise. Yeah, Tolu Akadale, so like finally put away a chance. And I think you mentioned just then, Scott, about Vardason being quick off his line, and I feel like you're just a sly dig here potentially at Anthony Morris for being so indecisive in this moment. And we'd seen the ball going over the top of this defence constantly this game. Like, Genk were having a really nice kind of time of it getting over the top. And Joris was like, I'd be worried because Tolu's actually not very quick, but he's looking quite quick in this game against Burgess and Sykes. And it was like constantly that ball over the top was causing the problems. Maurice just, he dilly-dallied. And when you do that as a goalkeeper, you're just asking for trouble. And you just, the camera panned to Blessing and you could just see that is what he was saying. He was like, either come out or stay in, like pick one of them, but preferably come out. So it's not the first, like Morris, he's been a fantastic servant for that club. And I think he deserves to go out on his own kind of own right and stuff like that. But I do think this summer might be the time where they say, thank you for everything, but we're going to move on. Unfortunately for him, but it just feels like it's getting to that point, doesn't it? Where, although we've said this before, haven't we, with Simon Mignolet, they got to a point where we were like, I think it's time. And then he just became like the best goalkeeper in the league for like 3 months again. I can't remember if you remember that, but he was just unbelievable. So maybe Morris will have one of those, but I'm not sure. This, like we said, it just brings everything back together in terms of the title race. Burgess, I presume, has been, I don't know if they're appealing the red card, if it's, I haven't seen anything, but he, if you haven't seen it, he gets sent off basically for just throwing the ball at Tolu from a throw-in, just like absolutely like launching it at him, which I think I can't believe he's never been sent off in the Belgian Pro League. And I am a big Christian Burgess fan. I love kind of like the way he plays the game. It's just entertainment. It's so funny. But I generally cannot believe all the antics he get up to, that this is the one that sees him get sent off. But I don't know what you thought of it. I thought, like, I kind of understood, but I thought also, as well, I feel like this isn't a red card for this. I feel like this is a red card for a culmination of all his antics put into one moment where they're like, right, you know, we're done with you, Christian. We're going to give you the red.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the moments of the weekend for all sorts of reasons. For me, unfortunately for Big Christian, it's the first red of his career, one that he's not going to forget. Yeah, I mean, lots of fans of opposing teams, he's the sort of player that lots of other fans like to hate. There was a lot of talk about this after the red card, a lot of people delighted that some accumulative red card had just appeared, which I thought kind of said a lot. But I think that's more testament to the sort of player that Christian is, and the fact that most fans actually secretly would quite like him in their team in a way. I think he's a big character in that dressing room, a really big one. He's extremely well thought of by the club. I can understand why. Really good advocate for the club. As is Anthony Maurice, funnily enough, another huge presence in that dressing room. Big talker in the centre circle, pre-game and post-match as well. Big character. He, because he's a big character, took the blame this weekend, actually. He did say after the game, he said, look, you know, it wasn't my best game, wasn't the best moment, and it was my mistake. So he's taken the hit for that. And I think that's definitely a testament to how big he is in that camp. Union were generally under par, I think, this week. Everyone's allowed that once in a while. They weren't awful, but, you know, by their standards, you know, nowhere near it, to be honest. They really did miss Amura, actually. They missed the energy and the directness and the guile and just the impact that has on the players around them. So they really need to get him back in quickly as possible, because I think although Nielsen's been pretty good for a wee while, he's not necessarily right for this particular game. They were missing that guile and that speed to get in behind Genk. They tried really hard to get back into the game and you know, created a few sort of opportunities. It didn't happen for them. Our Joris's side, now a bogey team for Union, because that's the second time they've beaten them this season. The last team to beat them as well. 24 games before this defeat. Going back to Genk. So Genk closing that circle, which is kind of quite nice in a stats way. I'm sure Joris will have enjoyed that one. But Genk actually did all the dirty stuff really well. Things that sometimes I've criticised them for a little bit in the past, I thought they were really good at this weekend. I think they've got Union's number a little bit. And maybe there's something for other sides to have a look at in video analysis here, because putting your foot in and not allowing them time in the ball and being just a bit more physical with them, you know, going down that Antwerp road a little bit, it works for them against Union, obviously. So there's kind of something in that. which I thought was kind of quite interesting. Big shout out to Horowski. I thought he had a really decent game. But yeah, an interesting one. And I suppose, you know, the loudest cheers on full time in this game were probably in the Mauve side of Brussels.
Yeah, a couple of kilometres away. Now, you mentioned Burgess and kind of the way he plays. He just reminds me of Reading fans, if they're listening, will probably remember we had a defender for a very short period of time called Zurab Kishinishvili, the Georgian central defender. And he was a master of the dark arts of defending. Like he got away with all the pushes and stuff. And I'll never forget, we played City, I think, in an FA Cup game. And Mancini, I think it was at the time, he chucked some Balotelli. And you could just see this man's face lights up because he's like, this is the exact sort of player I want to get under the skin of. And you just know that if Burgess was up against a Balotelli, he would do it. And Balotelli comes on and the ball's like it's sort of at the other end of the pitch. And Zurab just goes, he just pushes him over. Like days before VAR, just pushes him over. And it's like, he just instantly gets to him. And it's that sort of defender that you love to have on your team because you know that they somehow just get away with everything. There's other defenders that just seem, they'll try it, but they just can't. But this man, Zurab Kishinishvili, used to get away with it. I feel like Burgess is one of those. He gets away with it. And it's, for the neutral, it's very entertaining. I love watching it. It's just hilarious to watch.
I think his, I think the hearing was actually, well, as of recording just now, I think it was earlier on this afternoon. And I think at the moment he's looking at a two-match ban, I think, which, you know, considering we're now very much in squeaky bum time, back to that again, it's the third time. Thank you, Fergie. It's probably the worst possible point in the season that you're looking at a suspension like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's players in there who I think can come in and actually do. I mean, Rossi Sykes has been great. You know, so, you know, and getting a bit more game time this season as well, you know, so he's an option to kind of fill that spot directly rather than play alongside him as well. So, you know, they do have options, but, you know, bearing in mind how important he is, like I say, and at the time of the season we're at, we don't know yet, but that incredibly silly and funny red card could yet, and I'm just putting it out there in the spirit of hot takes, could yet turn out to be much more significant than it even appears. We don't know.
Yeah, no, definitely, especially when you think, I think McAllister's injured still. So I don't know what's up with Makeda. So it kind of depends on his situation as well. So we'll see. But I just had this like awful feeling watching them. I was like, here we go again sort of feeling. And I know they probably don't have that. And I know kind of everyone around, like the fans probably don't want to have that, but I just had that like sinking sort of feeling. I was like, please don't do it again. Like, yes, we are very neutral on this podcast and all of that, but I think a lot of kind of neutrals want them to win it just because of everything that's happened over the past couple of seasons. And it's just kind of like, please no. And you mentioned the physical nature of kind of how Genk played, and I think you're definitely right. And I think, to be fair, I just also wanted to give a shout out to Anwar Ait El Hadj. Really nice to see him playing and kind of with a smile on his face. But they're playing circle next. They love physicality circle. Like, they are desperate for physicality. Like, if the more physical, the better for those guys. So that's kind of not the team you want to play next, potentially. So it'll be really interesting to see how they get on. But hopefully they get back on track, because I don't want them to falter in the playoffs again. Like, it would just be too painful for a third season for this to happen.
I think it's an interesting point, that, actually, because obviously a few people on social media, I saw them going, oh, hello, is it happening again? And I was thinking, okay, look, it's absolutely the worst possible start to your playoffs, but the playoffs this season obviously are 10 games. You have some more, so you can probably avoid, one, depending on the way things go, are arguably two results that aren't ideal for you. I think it's important, really important, they win this coming weekend. And like you say, that's a hard game they've got there. The video analysis people, as I was saying, at Cercle will be having a good look at this and going, yep, tick, tick, tick. I think it's in many ways not the ideal game for them to have, because they cannot afford to come into those games against Anderlecht, which are probably going to be the key games. We all thought that, dropping any more points. It's interesting hearing Blessing, actually, after the game, you know, regular watchers of their Belgian football will know that, you know, he likes to address the players in the centre circle, and often the club release some of this on their social media, which is great. Long may that continue, those little insights. He was saying, look, you know, we weren't quite at it. It's just one game. There's nine to go. Forget it. Go again, which was absolutely the right message, to be honest, because watching Alexander Blessing this weekend, you could tell in his body language. I'm a big body language guy, as people know, regular listeners know. I saw it. You could see, he just knew. He knew the game was a write-off. You could tell that he felt that it was just one of those days, because he thought they were actually better, much better in the second half, but didn't get anything for it. So, yeah, I think what I would say to Union fans and anyone else is don't panic yet. I think, you know, if we're in this place next weekend and something similar happens again, then I think there's an interesting conversation to be had. But, yeah, I think, yeah, it's definitely the right message from Blessing. Let it go. You know, it's all still there for us.
Definitely, yeah, because I mean, if they lose the Circle and Union Anderlecht beat Club, they then go into that game against Anderlecht at Lotto Park on the 14th of April as the chasers rather than the team ahead. And it's kind of like all that psychological kind of stuff that I know you love as well, Scott, kind of wears your head at when that happens and you suddenly go from being chased to being the chaser. Like, is that good? Is that bad? It's kind of all those different things. So, Squeaky Bum Time is well and truly alive. I feel like we've probably used that as an episode title before, so I'm not sure if we can use it again, but it could be quite fitting just to use it for the rest of the time. Who knows? So kind of looking quickly over the kind of playoff picture at the moment, Union stay top, Anderlecht in second, level on points. Club and Genk are level on points. Club are in third, Genk in fourth. Genk play Antwerp next week, so they can kind of extend a nice little lead for kind of European football and guarantee themselves at least some European football potentially there. Circle kind of chasing, they were always going to be kind of chasing anyway, but they're only like, 2 points off of Club Brugge in third place, so they've got plenty of chances. Gent top of the second playoff, a point ahead of Mechelen, 4 points ahead of St. Truiden, and then Standard, Vesla and Leuven are just kind of there, so whatever to them. People will be like, what about the relegation group? Hasn't actually started yet. They've had a nice little break. So while they kind of rest up and have a break, it's all going a little bit crazy in the Challenger, isn't it, Scott? So we've whizzed through the Pro League, so we've probably got a little bit more time to actually dwell on what is going on in the Challenger, because it's squeaky bum time down there as well.
Yeah, it's a total dogfight. There's no doubt about it. There's dogfights all over the place at the moment. We've reached match day 27, and what a weekend, actually. A lot happened on and off the pitch. Bierschot beat Jong Genk 1-0, arguably slightly controversially. We might talk about that in a minute. But Bierschot are now very close, three games to go before the end of the regular season. It's within touching distance, you know, not only that direct promotion back to the Pro League, but also the title as well. Club next lost 1-0 to Dender, who are very much in the mix for that automatic spot now. Three wins in their last four. Anderlecht Futures drew three each with Frank Baran. Denza drew one each with Zulte Waregem in the East Flemish derby. Denza, a couple of defeats recently. Are the wheels coming off there at absolutely the wrong moment? We don't know yet. And, you know, it's an interesting one to keep an eye on, because they were, for a while, very much the form side. And all over Bierschot. So that's a really interesting one. Zulte are in a bit of trouble really now. Obviously, I think automatic promotion is kind of gone for them now. It's all really about coming up via the playoffs, if possible. I think Vincent Everard's in big trouble personally. I'm just going to put that out there. It's come up via the playoffs or that's it. It's pretty clear now. He more or less said as much as well. And they've really had an iffy season. SL16 lost 1-0 to Lierse, who are not quite safe yet, but I think another win will do it for them. Sarang and Oostend finished one each. Patro Eisden beat Lommel 3-0 in the Limburg derby, and RFC Liège battered Beveren 5-1, not only to effectively end their season, but also to end Wim de Decker's time at the club as well. He's gone in the aftermath of that, and I don't think anybody was that surprised. I was having a look at his record actually, 30 games in charge, won only 13, drew 6, lost 11, 1.5 points per match on average. And it's just got mediocrity written all over it. Local boy, to Beveren, of course. So it'll be a bit of a sore one for him, I think. A lot of fans glad to see the back of him, if we're being honest. There weren't many people who had anything complimentary to say about him. They've just had a really topsy-turvy, inconsistent season, Beveren, and the truth is they should have done so much better, even with the squad that they've got now. They lost some huge players in the summer. Last season they should have gone up, but for the quirks of the league system, they missed out on a point when only one side went up. Just, you know, horrible for them. They lose some key players, replace them, new sporting director, a lot of change at the club, and it just hasn't really worked out for them the way that they would have hoped. Vindedekker's paid the price for that. In terms of the bigger picture, Dender are up to third, as I was saying, right in the mix. Dens are dropped to fourth, but are still in playoff contention. Zulte now just hanging on to their playoff spot. But really, the interesting thing is, it's any one of four for that second automatic promotion spot at the moment. You know, Lommel, Dender, Denza and Patro are, yeah, right in that dogfight. Zulte would argue that they're still in with a chance, and they kind of are mathematically, but I don't think anybody really sees it. It's worth pointing out that RFC Liège are still within a chance of scraping into that playoff as well and getting into that mix themselves. So it's really getting really interesting down there. And 3 weeks from now, match day 30, whatever you're doing, try and watch a couple of those games, because as I've been saying for weeks now, I reckon it's going to the final seconds of the final game to see who can get that second automatic promotion spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. So many things to touch on. I'll start with Dender. I was just like really interested in having a look at kind of them and their kind of history and stuff. And they last were in the Pro League, what, 15 years ago, I think it was, and the top flight, they get relegated. It's just kind of been bouncing around a little bit. Obviously, it's Timmy Simons now, isn't it, in charge of them, who is a name that a couple of Beveren fans have already chucked into the mix as to say who they want to come in, which isn't surprising given the job he's done there at the moment. And their kind of end of season fixtures are probably one of the more difficult run-ins. They've got Denza and Zulte Waregem next, but both games are at home. So if they can win those two, I think they then finish against Van Brands at the end, so a team that's kind of well and truly down there. You'd expect them to win the last game. If they can beat Denza or Tavaregem, like, Lommel might drop points. They've shown they're capable of dropping points. Dender have beaten or drew with Lommel. They've beaten Beveren. Like, they've done it against kind of the bigger teams. Drew with Beerschot. Like, they've had a really, really decent season against these top sides, and they've beaten the other teams kind of further below, so they're not kind of afraid of that. So they're just such an intriguing one to see come up, because it's such a small place. It's such a small stadium and stuff like that. I think you're right about Denza. I feel like they have really dropped off. Beerschot are basically up. They just got to draw or beat Oostend next week, and that should be fine. But yeah, I think Beveren's the big kind of big one. That it's just such a disappointing season for the fans, for the club. Last season, like, I think always maintained it should have been two up, and it should have been them and Molenbeek. They were by far the best teams in that league. We've seen what Molenbeek have brought to the table, so it might have been nice to have another team bringing something to the table as well. But I think that not going up last year seems to have set them back a long way. And this, you just can't lose 5-1 in the situation that they're in, where they're fighting for the playoffs and they're fighting for their lives to get into the playoffs, to a side that's kind of really close to you. So I think something had to give, and in the end it had to be Dedeker. And really, really interesting to see how they approach this summer, because every year they've kind of gone into it being one of the favourites to get promoted. And last season they got super, super close. But then this season they're well off the pace of the likes of Beerschot, who we didn't really see as being in and around there. And we're talking about a side in Beerschot who are up for sale, lost their manager halfway through the season. They're still clinging on doing what they've done. They haven't broken the bank on anyone either, as far as we know. Who knows what they're doing behind the scenes with some of these things. We know that kind of, yeah, money does kind of go around a little bit in terms of player fees and agents and stuff like that, but they seem to have been doing quite a decent job in terms of that sense. So yeah, I think really frustrating for them. And it's, I think in the end it probably will come down to how Dender do against Denza and Zulte Waregem. If they can win those two games, it should be between them and Lommel. Not sure about Patro. I feel like, again, inconsistent, but they put a little bit of a run together. Lommel, three wins, and then they get a defeat. Like, it's all just a little bit chaotic, and no one really is taking control of it apart from Beerschot and Dender at the moment. The only team that's really, really super consistent, I guess, are SL16 by just losing most weeks. So at least they're kind of following on the footsteps of their kind of their adult club, I guess we could call them in standard. So, yeah, I don't know if you've got any other thoughts on it, Scott, but it is just, it's very entertaining. And I think the kind of the format this year seems to have really worked quite well in terms of two automatic places and then the playoffs. Lots of teams still with lots to play for at this point of the season.
It's such a difficult league to get out of this one now. It's becoming more and more difficult to get out of and more competitive as well. And I think you have to bear in mind there are some sides in there that have spent a lot more money than sides who actually have a bigger budget but maybe don't necessarily choose to spend it as such. I mean, Patro Eisen, it has to be said, have spent a lot of money. They've been offering seriously big contracts. I mean, look at the Steph Peters deal, that four-year deal. You know, there was a number of clubs interested in Steph before he went there, and he was looking for a certain length of contract, and Patro gave him a four-year one. Now, I don't think he was looking for a four-year deal, but they wanted him badly enough to throw the money and a four-year deal at his age. Now, he's still got plenty to offer, but that tells you about their willingness to spend money. You know, the Common Group, not the wealthiest of owners, but in terms of the money they're spending there, it's a lot of money. Obviously, Lom will have money to spend and generally have spent it kind of quite wisely. And Zultar, another side, their whole season was kind of predicated on we're going to keep our best players, which they've done. They're going to perform and we're going to go up automatically. They've kept the players, but they haven't performed and they're not going to go up automatically, almost certainly by the looks of it. So their season at the moment is looking like a bit of a failure. They won't want to, you know, say anything about that at the moment because, you know, there's still an opportunity to go up, but they're going to have to do it the hard way. And that's a club with arguably the biggest budget in the league, so there's going to be big changes there on and off the pitch, I think, if they can't come up. Beveren actually are an interesting one because Beveren do have some money to spend, but have been very, very conscious about not breaking their budget structure. I've had these conversations with Antoine at Beveren, and he's been very honest and say, look, we've been in for a lot of players that, you know, our fans would want us to be in for, but, you know, we've got a ceiling on what we're operating with here, and yeah, we could break it, but we're not going to do it because we're not daft. And actually, I've got a little bit of sympathy for them. Like I say, a lot of good players in there who just haven't performed consistently, and that's kind of killed them this season. So it's definitely one to watch to see what they do next. Because of, you know, how difficult it is to get out of, as I was saying. It's a case of when rather than if now for Beerschot. SL16, on the other hand, to go down to the bottom, they could go next weekend depending on results. And then it looks very much to be between Oostend and Serang as to who goes down. And obviously there's been some good news at Oostend over the last 10 days or so. It's really important that they stay in this division, I think, because that could affect other interested parties coming in. The administrator said as much a few days ago. He went, look, there's two definites who are right in the conversations at the moment, but there could be others if they stay in this league. So that's something to keep an eye on. And they need maybe another 4 points possibly out of the last three games to kind of stay in there, so they're fighting away hard. But this league's definitely worth watching. Try and see some action over the next 3 weeks before we get to the end of the playoffs, and certainly on match day 30, that last regular round, that's going to be proper wild. Talking about dogfights, that entire league's going to be a dogfight that weekend.
Yeah, no, I think as well, like you've mentioned, Selang and Oostend, obviously two teams that went down last season. Thought of Algem, another team that went down last season. So I think it shows that, like, for those sides kind of in that bottom four at the moment, there is absolutely no guarantees. I think you'd probably have Oostend, Selang with kind of compare them maybe to kind of maybe an Erpen and a Kortrijk where ownership issues, not very strong financially, that sort of thing. Whereas Zulte Waregem, you'd probably say like a Molenbeek or Charleroi, where if Charleroi went down, I think they'd try and do what Zulte Waregem did, which is keep the squad together as much as possible, even though it's not very good, but keep it as much as possible and then think you can kind of spend your way back out. And it just doesn't work. And we've seen this in so many like leagues around the world where they go down, like a team will come down and they'll have that period where they're like, oh no, this is a bit, it's nice to not be playing in that top league. Like with Zolta as well, like beginning they were playing really well in automatic promotion. You slide off, you end up in the playoffs, and invariably you don't go up. Like my Reading did that when we first got relegated, when we first got to Premier League, great season. Second season was a struggle, got relegated, kept most of the squad together that we could, kept the manager and Steve Coppell, were kind of in the kind of 1-2 place, like everything was looking good. We had a bad run of form, ended up in the playoffs, knocked out of the playoffs, and then we were rebuilding for a couple of seasons. We got Brendan Rodgers in, it was terrible, all that sort of stuff. So I think there's plenty of kind of good about this league by saying, look, teams that have come down aren't going straight back up. Like, it's good if you're like a neutral, it's not great if you're going down, because it says, so is how competitive it is down there, which I think is good, because yeah, in some other leagues, like the Championship now, which has been completely ruined by parachute payments, so let's be fair, like, it would have been nice for East End and Selang to have some parachute payments. Like East End had probably kept them afloat for a little bit longer, but you give these teams too much money and it kills this league, where you want new teams to rise to the top, like a Dender, like a Bierskot coming back. Lommel's slightly different because, like we said, they've got lots of money, but it kind of it creates more of a competitive league, which is what we want.
Yeah, it's definitely, as we were saying, becoming better all the time, and much faster than I think people expected. Your point about parachute payments in the Championship in England is a really interesting one, because we know that in Belgium, in terms of TV rights money for sides in the Challenger Pro League, it's virtually non-existent. We had a really conversation with this about with Alex Musio at Union when he joined us for our special a long time ago now, and Alex talked a little bit on that special, which if you haven't heard, scroll back, everybody. Scroll back on the back catalogue, it's there and it's a cracker. Alex made the point in that episode that it's a difficult league to get out of unless you spend some money. He wasn't arguing a lot, but you do have to spend to get out of that league, because there is no TV rights money. That may change over the next couple of years as the TV deal, the current one, comes to an end, but as it stands at the moment, it's not only a nightmare to get out of because it's becoming more competitive, you don't get any extra resources to put into that. Which is why Zolta said, look, we're probably operating with the biggest budget. Let's hold fast on that and let's rely on that to be the thing that takes us back to the top table. And it hasn't worked for them. So it's a dangerous, dangerous league, you know, that's worth keeping an eye on. And the other thing, one last thing I'll say about the Challenger Pro League this week is that it's getting more and more attention from scouts and other clubs for its recruitment as well. Up until quite recently, nobody bothered, surprisingly, very surprisingly, although they should have. Now I think people are going, hang on, yeah, there's definitely, you know, there's some value down there. Not only for Pro League clubs, but for clubs outside of Belgium as well. So it's a league on the up, actually.
Yeah, it's strange, it's taken a while for the Pro League to kind of get on board with signing players from the Challenger. We were banging the Yusuf Shaluk drum for many times on this podcast. And unfortunately, he just keeps getting injured, so he hasn't really been able to show what he can do to prove us right that maybe some others. Bertaccini next year, if he can finish with 20 goals, we'll be like, yeah, there we go. Let's quickly get to some list of questions before we leave. The first one is from Guy Burton. Or Guy Burton, sorry, Guy or Guy. I'm terrible with pronunciations. Guy obviously runs the fantastic football politics podcast, which Scott has obviously been on before, and there's some great, great episodes on there. He says, is there any chance that the playoffs might one day be scrapped, or does last season's cliffhanger now mean they're set to stay? Plus, is Union going to bottle it for a third time? We've kind of covered the second one. I think on the first one, I think you've kind of answered it there. I think last season's cliffhanger means it's going to be hanging around for a little bit longer, and kind of the end of the regular season with teams still having something to play for. The problem is now they don't. It's less exciting for some of these games, and there will be some complete pointless kind of almost like pre-season friendly Stoke vibes to some of these games. But I think Scott Alderweireld scoring a last minute winner and the trophy kind of hovering around loads of different stadiums means that the Pro League are going to be like, well, we're keeping this.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? I mean, that you know, last season is as good as it gets, you know, in terms of drama. I'm pretty sure that can't be beaten. Maybe one day it'll be equaled, but I don't know about beaten. I suppose the one caveat in all of this worth reminding everybody about is there have been a number of secret meetings recently between the heads of supposedly some of the top clubs. There's an argument that some of the people at that table are not at a big club, but anyway, that's a side issue. Yeah, and they've been discussing the format that in the future. Because as I was saying earlier, the current TV rights deal ends right about this time next year, the end of next season. And after that, before then, it'll be up for grabs again. So what they're discussing all the time is, what is the format going to be like for that new TV deal? And if they think collectively they can get a vote through where there could be a change that might mean they get more money, then they'll do that. So do the TV companies think it's more exciting to have playoffs than not? That ultimately will be really what determines it. But taking the playoffs off the table is something that's being discussed. And that, which I've always been in favour of, you know, I don't like the way the playoffs work. Regular listeners will know that. I think if you go to a regular league structure without playoffs, then that removes a lot of dead rubber games. You would still have some at this stage of the season, but I think you would have a little bit less potentially, you know, than the 8 or 9 we're going to see for some sides now. So there is an argument in favour of doing away with it. We'll just have to wait and see on what they decide. I think, as ever, the big boys have a slightly different opinion to this than the medium to smaller size clubs. Some things never change.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Every league is kind of similar, isn't it? If you're not going to scrap, at least scrap playoff two. I think that's the biggest waste of time. It was like a participation sort of trophy vibe, wasn't it? It was like, we need something kind of for everyone to be a part of, and it's like, that's so pointless. And yeah, I don't know, it's just kind of the kind of one thing that it also raises is that, like, last year, obviously, we in the UK could follow it, listening to Will, and we had Will's commentary for the playoffs. None of that this year. And that is kind of a bigger red flag for me, that was one of the most exciting things, but that could have happened without, not like anyone listening or anyone watching, but like the global audience that you can reach with that, like a former Tottenham player scoring this goal, and that the storylines it created and stuff like that would resonate with a kind of wider audience when you can broadcast it more widely. And it's just, that is something that really needs to be sorted out, I think, for next year from a selfish point of view. Because I can watch Norwegian football on Elite on One Football for free. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, how can Norway realise that very quickly, that if you just invest in it this little bit, yeah, there's no commentary or anything, but I can still watch the games, and I can watch kind of this Norwegian talent that will inevitably end up in Belgium because we sign loads of players from the Elite Serien, so it's quite nice. But it just seems a bit silly that I can do that, but I can't watch any of the Belgian stuff when there's some great teams and players there. So that, for me, is kind of, sort that out before we start changing any more formats, because we've only just changed it, and it's like, it gets a bit confusing if you keep fiddling around. It's hard to compare across seasons sometimes. You're like, which format were they using at that point and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah, it's wild. Yeah. You have an increasing interest in an audience who are willing to pay for it if it's all available for them, like us, and you're in this bizarre situation where we're having to find alternative methods to do that. And you do that because you have to allow us to continue doing what we're doing. But, you know, you do feel that things are being sold short, of course. So that's something to keep an eye on for over the summer, that situation getting sorted, hopefully.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I'm sick of watching grainy streams on betting sites that I've left 10p in for years now, just to continue to have access. It's a bit boring, let's face it. Maybe this is where the idea of, not necessarily the Bene League, but maybe like a Bene stream, that's what they should do. Eredivisie and the Pro League could maybe come together and be like, let's package our things together and let's distribute it for all the Dutch speakers out there and something like that, and kind of entice people in that, like, you can watch Ajax, or you can watch Club Bruges, or you can watch FC Volendam, and you can watch Kortrijk, because I'm sure that will bring people forward. Let's go to the final question from Darth Squidge, who says he is definitely a Union fan. I think we asked the question, is he a Union fan? Just making sure. I think, not to read this all out, but I think it's kind of in a two-part, but I think basically, and you can tell us if we're wrong, the kind of the essence of the question is, do Union as a fan base need to be more intimidating rather than being, not happy clappy, because that seems a bit ridiculous, but they are quite a positive fan base. Like, they react to things by being positive rather than kind of showing like booing or whistling. And he says they did start to do some booing and whistling of other teams and stuff, but they're normally just singing their songs and singing their chants and doing that sort of thing that we've seen there. Do you think there's anything in that that will help? I think it kind of, if your identity as a fan base is in that sort of thing, I think you embrace it and you keep that. Because I think in the long run, it just doesn't really matter. I think players are so used to playing within kind of intimidating or positive atmospheres. I think they're very good at shutting most of it off anyway. So I don't think it makes a massive difference. And I kind of like if your identity is tied up in being a positive fan base and always looking at things in more of a positive light. I think especially if the playoffs go the way they've gone the last couple of seasons, you're probably going to need to be more like that anyway.
Yeah, I don't think they need to change anything. You know, stay exactly the, you know, the way they are. You know, be true to yourself, because that's what makes Union supporters Union supporters, actually, and makes the club, you know, so interesting and attractive to a lot of people outside. That whole identity is wrapped up in that. And actually, if they were to change and go more down the road that kind of Darth's hinting at, I think, without naming any clubs, there are definitely a number of other clubs in Belgium and in other countries who do have a fan base much more like that identity. You know, so leave them to that, and yeah, Union just continue being Union, because it's been at the heart of everything that's been positive about what they've been doing, largely on and off the park as well. So yeah, that whole atmosphere and energy and the solidarity that comes with that on a human level is a massive part of that club's identity. And it would actually be tragic, I'll go that far, genuinely tragic, if something more dark and sinister kind of appeared there. So yeah, no, as you were.
Well, I do like that. Obviously, you referred to Darth Squidge as Darth, and it brought very kind of Star Wars vibes, and then became like more to the dark side of things, like kind of
yeah, don't do it.
Stay in the light. They're definitely they're one of those teams that's got kind of a fan base that, let's say, likes to kind of get a little bit kind of misbehaving. Might be returning to the Pro League next season in the purple side of Antwerp. So let's keep like the more positive vibes as well, because I don't know, if they do get promoted, we can maybe take a kind of a bet without money attached to it, to how many games Beerschot fans will actually see before they get banned from the stadium for some nonsense or another, because yeah, they're very much used to doing that. I think that's probably it for this episode. Obviously, we'll be hopeful that Joris will be back soon. However, like I said, he's doing kind of adulty things, and these things are kind of a little bit more important than podcasting at the moment. But he will definitely be back before too long. Before the end of the playoffs, I'm going to promise. And when he edits this, he's now been kind of promised to do it, so he has to do it. Otherwise, I look stupid. So, yeah. Anyway, Scott, as always, it's been a pleasure just running the two-man game with you.
It has. I've really enjoyed this week's recording. Have a lovely week, everybody, whatever you're up to. And some of us in some form will see you again very soon.
Yeah, we'll definitely be back, I'm sure. But yeah, as Scott said, enjoy. The lighter days are coming if you're in the kind of northern part of Europe and all that sort of stuff. It's starting to feel like a nice time to be outside and about. And football in the spring is always lovely as well. Yeah, as always, if you like what we do, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. You can always donate to us as well if you really do like what we do at the Buy Me a Coffee as well. Once again, thank you very much for listening to this episode, and we'll speak to you very soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.